art, culture, politics, activism. Now, art in the pandemic age. Have you ever wondered why artists do what they do? What is their purpose? What are they trying to accomplish? I'm your host, Kyle Roman. Welcome to Artivism Now. Artivism, defined, is a portmanteau word combining art and activism. How is it that artists push the boundary of their medium? How do they move societies forward? How do they resolve issues in their neighborhoods, both local and worldwide? These questions are what we set out to answer by interviewing artists locally and the world over. We will get answers to those questions that artists put out there in the community. Welcome to the final episode of Season 1, Artivism Now. I'm your host, Kyle Roman. We welcome back Desi Mundo, founder of CRP. And we get an update on the Sundance mural in Oakland and what's in store for the future of CRP. Thanks. Cool. Thanks for joining us back. You know, it's been awesome seeing the progress through Twitter and the website and everything. And you guys are officially done, right?
No.
Oh, you're not? Oh, okay.
We are 99.5%. Like, there is another little tiny, basically there was an electrical box that was replaced on the far left side of the wall that finally they had tore it down and they told us they're going to put a new one in. And okay. So I've been like for the last, like I've got it primed, I started painting it. And then I've had a lot of obstacles to actually get it that last little bit done. And, but it should be done soon. You know, it's kind of funny, like my work, because I was sick, has been piling up on me. So I'm kind of getting it from all angles right now in terms of like, I need to be doing, I mean, need to be in a lot of places at once, but, I'm gonna just quickly slide through. The air quality has been so terrible too. I haven't wanted to be outside. I think contributed to my illness. And then on, you know, like going outside and like bringing it, like exposing myself more is not, has been part of the concern, you know? I just been, you know, like plotting and planning on all the stuff I gotta do, but I haven't been able to do much.
Oh, for real. I mean, that's just
the
nature of it.
The big work is done.
That's, yeah, it's looking amazing.
Yeah. So, but I haven't even taken final photos of it. I won't take pictures. I hate taking pictures of stuff and then, like, there's a piece of it that's not done.
Yeah.
And then, like, you're digging through your records and that's the one you find. So.
For real, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you mentioned the obstacles. That's actually something I wanted to get into with you, because, you know, for a long-term project like that, there's got to be some things that, you know, just kind of present themselves as standing in the way. And most of the people who listen to this are art students and students of mine and everything. So, like, you know, what do you have to dig up? Like, what do you have to you know, bring to the table in a long-term project like this to be able to overcome those obstacles?
Man, I mean, you know, this piece was so challenging on so many levels. I'm really thankful that it, you know, that it happened in the time that it happened and the way that it did, because I had foolishly made some negotiations with the parking lot where we weren't going to even bring the swing stage down onto the ground. We were going to do everything from the roof. We would not be able to lower it all the way down because cars would still be parked in the lot. And so when the pandemic hit and everything shut down, it allowed us to stage a lot more out of the lot. And we needed a lot of space to do that. And it would have just been like complete, you know, like nightmare to try to have approached it like that. So, you know, that there's like, you know, like just the logistics of accessing spaces on the wall is super challenging. And then there's the piece of, you know, when you're wearing stuff like harnesses and stuff like that, there's a physical toil that a lot of projects will always give you a little toil. You know what I mean? Like you're working on ladders, your calves get worn out. You're working on, you know, a scaffold, like, you know, it's different parts of your body are in weird positions to access the wall. In our case, we were using a very, you know, kind of older and rickety scaffold and a swing stage. And so there's just a lot of taxation on the body. And it was interesting because I was going 6 or 7 days a week, and I definitely felt it. And I think part of the reason I got sick too at this moment is because, you know, I put my body through a lot over the summer. And but I think even the you know, everyone else is working on, you know, four or five days a week, they were also feeling it physically. And you know, I was asking someone, I was like, what can we do better next time to like to not do, you know, to not have that level of wear and tear? And it's just really nothing. There's just no way around it.
Right.
You know, giving yourself a lot of breaks and stuff like that. It, you know, I think the only thing I would say that would really avoid it is not having other, you know, having the capacity to let this be your sole project and then still maybe working on that part-time or like, you know, maybe 4 days a week, but maybe like 10 hours a day instead of like, you know, and then giving yourself like splits, you know, it's tricky because there's also like a rhythm that you can kind of get. And so, you know, it's like how do you manage your rhythm and then how do you manage the rest of your life? You know, a lot of what was crazy is that a lot of the women were coming, they would paint with us and then they would go off and like volunteer on their days off at other locations or have other projects.
Yeah.
And so they were really like kind of burning the candle at both ends. And I was burning the candle at both ends on this wall by itself. So it takes a lot of just physical commitment. I do recommend, like, you know, something I learned when I was in mechanic school is actually working out before you get on a project or having a workout and exercise plan during these type of projects. And the reason for that is that your body still needs that. And it actually gives you a little bit of extra energy and strength to have a little bit of, you know, physical activity that's not painting. Or, you know, like, you know, where I learned it from was, you know, being a mechanic,
right?
You know, like, you know, that having that type of physical exertion actually helped you wrench, you know, cars, and the same thing works with murals, you know.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I think that that's a good, you know, one of the things that's overlooked, and often as artists, we're like, man, I'm just going to, you know, go so hard for this project that I'm going to put my physical body to the side. And I know I did that for years and I'm still trying to find the right balance. Unfortunately for me, like the right balance has been difficult during this pandemic. Because I like to get up at 5 a.m. and go work out at 6.
Yeah.
And then finish working out by like 7 and then have, you know, that 7 to 8 hour to kind of shower, eat, get into the, get ready to get going and still hit the wall pretty early in the morning. And really do that during the pandemic because the gym was closed. And
right.
So I was out, but I kind of had to wait for the sun to rise.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
But it just sets you back a little bit, a couple hours, you know, and so having that whole, that you know, like, you know, you have to be kind of balancing your mind, body, and your spirit. And everyone talks about all that all the time, but you have to make spaces for it, you know. And then, you know, this work is also like, you know, can be, you know, emotionally taxing too. And so just having spaces for your outlets and your things that you can do to kind of like release whatever's going on in your life, you know, and have a space for that. And because the mural painting by itself can be therapeutic, but it you know, like, I think the thing with having another place outside of that is good, because you don't want your therapy to last 8 hours 5 days a week, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
That just kind of, that's called living in your trauma and not having a space to, like,
you're right,
go deal with yourself and come back to it.
An interesting way to look at it. I agree. It makes total sense, you know?
Yeah, because I definitely try to use painting time to kind of work out my you know, whatever issues I'm going through.
For sure, yeah.
Because you have a lot of time in your head. And I actually love having music at the wall, but I'm not a person who brings music to the wall. Because I like to listen to the sounds of the street. That comes from being a writer, you know, like, I need to be hip to what's going on around me. And sometimes having music, as nice as it is, kind of like, my first thought is I want to be paying attention to my surroundings.
Yeah.
And, but then when people bring it, I'm like, hell yeah, turn it up, you know?
Exactly. Well, I know the one time that I went down to the Green Lining Institute to check out Ascendance, it was about a couple months ago, and I took my son with me just because I was like, we're going in, we're going to experience all this, I'm going to show you what's up, you know, what these professionals are that daddy's been talking to all this time. And I think you were way up on the swing stage, you were like towards the top, so you probably couldn't even hear my voice if I was yelling to you. And I think Marina was over off to the side. And so we just kind of stood out by the gate and just kind of watched you guys. But you're right, though, because the specific part of where Ascendance is, there's just all that natural kind of clutter of city ambiance that it reminds me of when I used to live in San Francisco. You know, I used to literally go to sleep to the sounds of the street. You know, like there's like that kind of, you know, numbing kind of lullaby kind of feel to it. And then sometimes during the days, it's a very vibe feel, like you get, you know, your heart rate jumps up because you're just like, oh man, I got to make stuff happen. Look, everybody else is making something happen. So I get you on that. Like if I was in the mural, you know, and a mural artist, I would definitely want to be connected to that, you know, just that heartbeat that's around you, especially in the urban cities.
Yeah, definitely, man. I feel like when you're in your home studio or you're kind of off in your own world, it's great to have, you know, a bunch of music and just jam out and you know, just get into that zone. And that's a really good place to be too,
for sure.
And I do see like I think once you're feeling like everything's cool, I understand why people like want to put their headphones on and just tune out the world. But I've never been one of those folks as much. I end up listening to it. If I have it, then I'll use it, you know, like, but it just doesn't, you know, for me, I'm like, my first instinct is I want to like, you know, you know, I get to some place, I just want to hear what's going on. I want to hear the car tires screech. If you're on the ground level, like it's good to be, you know, to hear a tire screeching or something like that. You never know when a car is just going to jump the curb and, you know, you know, you can kind of see like a lot of crazy things that happen in the city. We saw multiple car accidents. Car accidents, you know, happening while we were painting and stuff like that. So,
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I noticed on one of your guys' one of the Instagram posts too, Spencer has been out there kind of documenting, taking some video, taking some pictures and everything. Mm-hmm. Are you guys going to have anything that's going to come of that?
Oh, yeah. Cool. We're going to produce a couple, two actually, like 5-minute videos of the project.
Yeah.
Greenlining is going to produce one, and then we are producing one independently. Nice. And you know, it's just to make sure that like all of the, our needs are met, you know. Yeah. I think there will be some overlap in terms of the content, mm-hmm. but I think we also really strive as on the video side of things to always, you know, not have that overlap happen too much, that we're trying to make two, you know, like the stories don't feel like they're repetitive.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. I'm not really working on that closely, but I do think, you know, we did a pretty extensive documentation of this process. Mm-hmm. Eric Arnold was out there shooting process shots just about every day. Nice. Spencer filmed a lot. We had a couple of days where they brought the drone out. Mm-hmm. And then if we still have to take our final photos, and I'm just kind of like I've been holding off because of, you know, being unhealthy and waiting for that one little electrical box to get finished, and it shouldn't take more than a few hours, but everything with a brush takes a lot longer. Like, it'll take me, you know, 10 minutes with a spray can, but it probably wouldn't look as good, you know. And so I'm you know, getting, when I went out I started another wall near my house. And getting out there and doing it was kind of cool. And at the same time, one of the challenges was I was back using spray paint, felt a little rusty. And, you know, it's just like, yeah, the level of detail wasn't going to be there that I was kind of like had grown a little bit accustomed to in terms of the product. And I felt a little bit funny about that. Like, I was like, damn, man, I really appreciate having that level of detail. Mm-hmm. In the pieces that we're producing. So, you know.
Yeah, that's got to be interesting going back and forth between techniques and, you know, getting used to something and then, you know, finding, you know, maybe it's, you perceive it as a flaw, but, you know, maybe it's more of just like, you know, a hallmark of that specific technique that, you know, probably takes some getting used to going back and forth, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, just, like, you know, like, you know, trying to decide which aesthetics to use and also figuring out, like, you know, one of the next projects I'm going to do is going to try to maybe blend some of those aesthetics. I'm working with a brush artist, but I'm going to definitely spray. And just trying to figure that whole vibe out, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's a big thing to use a lot of brush because you can get that detail, and you can get it with a spray can. It's not like you can't. It's just, you know, there's certain pieces that I felt like, man, if I had a can of spray paint, I wouldn't have gotten this on this at this level of quality.
Right.
So it's interesting. And I'm still learning how to generate that. Like you know, I picked up from working with these professional women, a lot of those techniques.
Absolutely.
You know, but I'm still, you know, developing that in my conscience, and that's part of what I'm going to be doing. So there's a lot of opportunity for growth. And I think that part is the most exciting to me.
Yeah.
Is to have the opportunities to really grow as an artist, you know. And we see a lot of, you know, like right now, like especially with the big explosion in Oakland of all the kind of public artwork, it's very good. And there's also like a little bit of people being very quick about it, you know. And some of it's not as detailed, not as nuanced. And you see that in general with this new – you know, I mean, with the street art movement in general, there was kind of a movement away from detail and from like taking your time and really putting out that level of quality. Not every artist did that, of course. And, but you know, like it's sort of the focus on this one gigantic image, you know, it's going to be, I'm thinking in Chicago, there's that, you know, man, it's gotta be at least 20, you know, BB King, you know, one person. And done with a lot of detail, a lot of color, a lot of vibrancy, but it's still like that one image. And you go around and there's like, okay, you know, one person, two people, like, you know, maybe like it's not that level of like, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time with it. And some people kind of get a little too quick with it. You know, can kind of come out looking like, hey, I didn't really put a lot of thought into how this came out, you know what I mean? Even though, and then the weird thing is that everyone's still celebrating. you know, like it's all good in the end, right?
Right. So. Yeah. Well, yeah, and the thing about Ascendance, and then Alice Street before it, you know. It just captures a major population of artists, you know? And so your mentality, like you're like, let's include all these people because all these people matter. You know, it shouldn't just be about the people that are maybe popular to the masses, you know? So I think that's an admirable thing about the work that you've done with CRP, and the road from Alice Street to Ascendance is like, it's literally immortalizing a culture, you know, an artist culture that isn't, you know, can't be signified by just one person.
Yeah, that's always been like kind of the double-edged sword of the project is that, man, I mean, there's so many people that like individuals that you want to celebrate, man. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like I got to go back and do a piece just for, you know, Moshe Milan or some of the other drummers at the Malanga Center who I deeply like appreciate and have a lot of love for it and just ended up not being included in this piece, you know. And at the same time, it's like one of my big beefs with the city, with the tourism board, with a lot of kind of the approach from the institutions in Oakland is that these folks have helped shaped, you know, a city culture that has really been like the dynamic for Oakland, in my opinion. And they never get celebrated. And they're always focusing on, you know, kind of the new hip and whiter aspects of Oakland, you know, and they leave behind a lot of the foundation and a lot of which still exists, which isn't just like, you know, some memory in the past, but these are people that are teaching classes, you know, and raising generations of dancers and beyond dancers, just culture. Mm-hmm. And so like, it feels like those are the folks that the city should be putting energy into celebrating and if they're not going to do that, then I feel like the artists should be doing that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of artists aren't, you know, a lot of artists haven't really stepped up to the plate to do that. And I wish that they would. I think that there's plenty of space, plenty of stories, Oakland stories to be told that, we all could get to work doing this and it would be a very powerful movement. But it's also dope just to see like downtown Oakland right now is just so filled with like resistance artwork and it's in the moment at the same time, that's what Oakland historically has been. And so it's been really powerful just to see that, you know, on display. And it's kind of crazy because like some of the buildings, they're taking the boards off and, you know, hopefully there'll be like, I know that there is a serious effort to preserve that artwork.
Good.
And I just hope that it's successful and done in a way that really continues to contribute to the community.
Yeah, and that's one of the major things too during the span of ascendance is how the art imitating life, you know, saying kind of just bursted out with the racial equity movement and anti-police brutality movement and everything, Black Lives Matter. It just erupted while you guys were creating. And you guys had to, obviously you had to have witnessed marches and protests and you know, who knows what else. And that whole alley, that whole, that area right there, 14th Street, and it's loaded with original artwork from that movement that just bursted, once the protests and marches had, you know, what was that like being able to witness that going to the job every day?
I mean, I felt two things, man. I felt a huge case of fear of missing out.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is weird because like it's like you're painting, but it's like, you know, sometimes being that high up on the stage feels disconnected
Right. Yeah.
to what's going on there. Just because I was like, man, they're painting over here, they're painting over there.
Yeah.
I had a lot of homies just all over downtown, just, you know, taking over spaces, and I was like,
Yeah.
man, you know,
Yeah.
part of me would forget what I was doing and be like, I want to be out there. And then the other part would be like, hey, you know, get back into reality for a second.
Right.
But the other part was it was really dope, you know, to see just so much happen so quickly. And we went down there. We went, you know, I did the defund police banner during
Oh,
one of the
yeah.
protests. And then we took like, you know, an afternoon off and did a couple of paintings.
Nice.
You know,
Yeah, keep that connection.
for a second. And you know, the Twin Walls mural, both of them, like Priya went and worked with CC Carpio and a couple other folks,
Yeah.
and that got a lot of run. And then Twin Walls piece also got a lot of publicity and exposure and a lot of visibility, and people really loved it, you know. And I thought that was
That's
really dope to
awesome.
see them. And CC, of course, was volunteered with us
Yeah.
for a second, and then she went and just painted a bunch more pieces around downtown and continues just like her, you know, to with that drum beat of painting, you know.
That's awesome.
And so I think it's pretty crazy. I think it's pretty amazing, and
Yeah.
it was dope to be out there to see. Like, and I was, and then there's a part of me that got mad and was like, why did it take, you know,
Yeah.
a protest to get all this artwork into downtown?
Right.
You know, like, going riding through downtown, it was just so beautiful, and then it's like so frustrating that it has to, you know, like it has to be created in these situations where
Right.
there's where you know there's a major, you know, explosion and something terrible has to happen for us to go get.
Right.
You know, and then it's the only reason we have all this space is because these property owners are trying to protect themselves and even
Yeah.
trying to align themselves and be cool with, you know,
Yep. The
in order
protesters and
to,
yeah.
yeah, in order to get that space. And there's a couple of walls that have that are permanent that are coming out of it, and so that's good, you know.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I want to see more of that. I want to see like a way to kind of like keep it this vibrant and this relevant, because what was
Yeah.
happening in downtown before was there was a lot of painting, but there wasn't a lot, you know, like it was getting commissioned by those same developers, but they didn't feel the political urgency to and so the works that were coming out were more abstract, more apolitical, and less really connected to, you know, Oakland's history,
Right.
Oakland's legacy of, you know, aware of cultural awareness and political activism.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I was definitely kind of pushing back on the idea that, like, man, like, you know, it felt like downtown's artwork was really being privatized.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, you know, like, the pieces were just, you know, very just, you know, easy to swallow, but not a lot of substance to them.
Yeah.
And that not, and it doesn't mean that they weren't beautiful, and it doesn't mean they weren't well executed. But, you know, you had the sports teams, mm-hmm. you know, commissioning artists and taking over major real estate. But that's kind of an advertisement. That's not really like a mural.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. And then you have these developers commissioning artwork and you know, until there's, you know, people standing outside of their front door, they don't want nothing political on their stuff.
Right.
And the moment that the moment fades back and the tensions go away, they're going to go back to wanting something that's a lot more, you know, peaceful and mm-hmm. and not discussing the situations in the communities in Oakland. And so I want to see how we can get this to be a little bit more lasting, you know,
yeah.
and how we can get, you know, this the energy of this artwork to remain, you know, moving forward for the downtown area and for all of Oakland. But I right. thought that was a really important feeling, and it felt like Oakland again yeah. for a second, you know. It felt like that, you know, that mm-hmm. energy. And I was only out there for a couple of protests because we'd be exhausted by the end of the day. But you know, you could, you know, it's still Oakland, man. You still felt that vibe yeah. of people, you know, taking a stand. So that felt really yeah. good.
Yeah, that's interesting that you're kind of putting together the pieces of what sounds like it could be, you know, what's next for CRP, right? Is being able to maintain, capture, you know, coordinate that energy that has been brought there by the protests and marches and you know, hopefully some other organizations, much like you guys were able to do with Alice Street and that whole experience, you know, really bring together some other organizations and kind of do that coalition building that CRP has already proven that it can do in the city. So, you know, that'll be interesting to see, you know, who's out there that's willing to coordinate with a group like yours.
I mean, I feel like the work's already being done. There's yeah, been a lot of good. Conversation around it, and we would just probably try to move in solidarity with what's already happening.
Right.
There's been a lot of efforts, the cultural zone, and a couple of other organizations have been pivotal in trying to, like, you know, find a place for that artwork, and. I don't know what the conversation is moving forward about, like, once the boards go down, like, how do we keep that energy? And that's going to be a tricky conversation, mm-hmm. Because ultimately it goes back to the power of the private property owner, and what they're going to want to see long term on their spaces. I was putting it out there more just in the sense of that's what I think needs to happen.
Right.
CRP is definitely, you know, like we're because we weren't out on the street as much for this particular one because of the project we were doing, it wouldn't be appropriate for us to come in now and be like, oh, hey, this is what you guys should do. You know, right. But we stand in solidarity with the artists that did the work, you know, for sure.
That's great. Yeah, and you know, who knows, maybe there's another, you know, burgeoning you know, artist, activist who's gonna come from this with, you know, ideas for an organization that could align and, you know, and build with you guys. I think that's well within what's happened in Oakland in the past, and it sure as heck can happen again.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Well, hey, I'm gonna let you go. I know you're still getting well and everything, but thanks for taking the time out to give us the update and everything for Ascendance. And you know, I hope you get well soon, and we'll see you upon finishing.
All right, for sure. Take care.
All right, take care, Desi.
All right.
Bye. Special thanks to Desi Mundo for joining us again on the finale episode of Artivism Now. And thanks to the other Ascendance Mural Series artists, Spencer Wilkinson, Elaine Chu, and Marina Perez Wong, and all the other artists who joined us for the initial season of Artivism Now, Cielos Tibor, Mary Flowers, AJ Mitchell, Jaime Santiago Longa, our special report artist, Greta McLean, and the students from the Black Lives Matter protest, Curtis Gaines and Chandler Evans, and everybody else who contributed to making this first season happen, Megan Hyman for her artwork, and all the other artists out there who continue to inspire in the world. We'll be back with season 2 very soon. Now remember, artists out there, let it flow, let it mean something, and goodbye.